Adventures in Hell World presents Who Shot JFK?
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 It was Lee Harvey Oswald.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the bonus episode of Adventures in Hell World presents Who Killed JFK? It was Lee Harvey Oswald. Because Rob Reiner and Soledad O'Brien decided to do some unbelievably shameful post-script episodes. Which, Haley, my guest host, who I didn't even introduce because I'm an idiot, tell us what your first line about your notes of these bonus episodes was.
Hello, listeners. These episodes I will call the extended ad episode because my first, Mike said to me, he said to me earlier, the first bonus episode is just 11 minutes bulked up to 16 minutes with ads. And my exact first line in my notes was 11 minute episode bulked up to 16 minutes with ads, because it is. And you know what? It's hardly even an episode, even those 11 minutes, because after one of those long ad breaks, Soledad just comes in and does her 4 minutes of "this episode is brought to you by," and just lists 100 names.
Right.
So this was a very short episode of nothing.
Yeah, these episodes are, so if you are someone who deals with podcasts, you go to the podcast, it tells you the runtime, then you hit play, and then the ads jump into the podcast to give you your extended runtime. And these episodes are 11 minutes before you hit the button, and then they go to 16 or 17 minutes based on ads. And one of the episodes ended at, like, the final commentary between Rob and the guy that he's talking to ends, and there's like 5 minutes left on the podcast, and then it's 2 minutes of ads, and then it's 3 minutes of Soledad doing the credit read. So it's just like, oh my God. Like, these are actual 8 minute episodes, because the Soledad 3 minute credit read is at the end of it. So you get a grand total of that long, 8 minutes. That's all the new content you're getting from this. And what's so brutal is the first of these two episodes that I listened to, the documents episode, they do a complete 180 from what they did in the actual series, like the actual half hour episode series. Soledad at one point asks Rob, she's just like, "Rob, when we eventually do get all these documents declassified, is there going to be really anything in there?" And Rob's like, "No, they probably destroyed any evidence. That'd be really big. There's no smoking guns left in there. We're not going to get anything out of it." And yet in this episode, they're just like, if they give us these documents, it's going to show that the CIA was using Oswald in the fall of 1963, and that will be smoking gun evidence that they were doing bad things and that they set him up to take the fall for the president getting murdered.
And they said that George Joannides getting declassified will be the smoking gun. They're like, that's one of the smoking guns.
Yep. George Joannides is his documents being declassified will reveal how he hoodwinked and railroaded the House Select Committee on Assassinations, how the Miami office of the CIA looking into seeing if the anti-Castro Cubans killed Kennedy, if their investigation gets revealed to the public, that will be a smoking gun that will bring down this whole thing and topple this corrupt house of cards. Just all of it. It's just this constant thing where we literally ended the series by them saying that, like, these documents will not bring the House of Cards crashing down. And then if you listen to the 8 minute bonus content episode, they're like, oh no, it actually will. And they also explained that basically Trump failed them because he could have declassified everything and he didn't. And then Biden screwed them over by signing an executive order saying, hey, you guys just release them whenever the hell you want to, because I'm tired of this crap. The CIA's up my ass whenever we talk about this stuff. I'm done with you guys. So however you want to do it, you just do it. Leave me alone. I'm Dark Brandon. I have better things to do than worry about the Kennedy assassination. And so they got all kinds of really upset about this. And I think my favorite part was when the guy they brought on to talk, because Soledad can't speak in these episodes, the guy they brought on to talk with Reiner goes on this whole stem winder about how, and then we're going to get the truth and it's all going to come out. And Reiner just gruffly yells, right. Like he just like says the word right with such a snap to it. And so, yeah. So they basically just talk about how like, we need to trust in our institutions. We need to trust in the American people. We need to admit that quote unquote rogue elements of the CIA killed Kennedy with help from the mobsters and the anti-Castro Cubans, blah, blah, blah.
Also, I thought it was funny in this episode, because this is literally just, please release the documents. The episode, it's just him begging for the documents. And he's saying, like, we can't get the real story until all the documents are released, which is funny because he just did a whole podcast about how he has the real story. And he just totally named four guys as responsible for it. So that's an interesting claim. And then right after that, he says, it's impossible to get the real information due to the internet and all the disinformation out there. And it's like, oh, you mean like you?
You mean like what you're doing? Like,
you mean literally what you just did for 10 episodes straight? That thing?
Yeah, like I just don't understand how you can claim to be against disinformation and against, I don't know, like people like going down the wrong path when you were the ones that cherry-picked information. You're the ones who kept information away from your audience so that if they came into who killed JFK without much knowledge about the Kennedy assassination, they're not going to learn everything they need to learn. They're not going to get all the information that would help them out. Yeah. So it's just wild. It's just really wild that this, this thing is just, it's just so silly to me because I'm going to have a closing argument after we go over the second episode, but yeah, Rob is just, he's just awful for this whole thing about being like, upset and like, oh, the way this whole thing works is just so terrible and blah 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 and argle bargle. It's like, hey man, you literally didn't let Gerald Posner's interview air because he was pushing back too hard on the conspiracy stuff and was explaining how Oswald did it. So don't talk to me about open minds and a desire for transparency and free and flow of information. So that was basically the document episode. Haley, you have anything more to add about the document episode, Haley?
Not really. I just do think it's funny that he keeps saying that the Warren Commission is the reason why the youth do not have trust in the government, which is like,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. The kids are going to vote for Trump because they are mad at the government for not telling us who really killed Kennedy.
Like yeah, they care.
Yeah. All kids care about is the fact that they get to watch a snuff film in high school and it's considered acceptable. Like, I'll never forget, I was in a history class and they were playing a video and this girl was sleeping at her desk because that's what you do in high school. And
me.
Yeah. And literally, this video was playing and then they were like, and then that terrible day in Dallas happened. And then like right after they said that, the girl just like jumped out of her seat. Basically she's just like bolted upright and just said, are they going to show it? She just so wanted to see the president's head explode. She just wanted to see that big cloud of blood just fly out of his head. And it's just like, man, you know, that's what kids care about. They care about seeing horrifying violence in an acceptable way. Because when you're a teenager, you're just a ghoul. You're just a bloodthirsty ghoul. I mean, that's what it's about. That's why horror movies exist. Because you just get to watch someone get mutilated with a chainsaw. And you get to pay $8 for the privilege. Here, you get to see it for free. You get to see someone die in front of you for free. It's great.
Yeah, so, when I was in high school, I remember missing the day where they showed us the Challenger disaster, and I was like, oh, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, yeah.
Teachers love showing you death.
Yes, it's that's what teachers are here to fucking inflict cynicism upon you and to reassure you that the world is a terrible place. So that was our documents episode, and then we move on to one of the staples of the Who Killed JFK podcast series experience, which is Rob Reiner yelling at an old person.
It's so funny.
It's the greatest thing in the world. So Rob grabs the Secret Service agent who told the story about how he found the bullet in the back of Kennedy's limo after the assassination.
Paul Landis?
Paul Landis. Yeah, Paul Landis, our guy who Rob totally trusts because he's confirming Rob's priors.
Can you tell us what you heard that day?
Yeah.
And then Paul's like, I saw the president's brain matter. Towards me.
And Rob, the most important part of this interview is the shit Rob cares about and the shit Rob lets slide away. And what I mean by that is Landis is talking and Landis is like, and then the first shot rang out and I turned over my shoulder to look where it came from. And then he just keeps going. And now, think about what Landis just said in that moment, that he heard a shot and he turned over his shoulder to look for where the shot came from. That indicates the shot came from behind. And that's where Landis heard it coming from. And that's why he was turning. What does Rob Reiner do when Landis says this? Reiner says nothing. He just lets Landis keep talking because he wants to get Landis past that statement. Because while Rob does admit there was a shooter in the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository, he doesn't want to draw attention to that through Landis's story because that screws with Rob's narrative. But when Landis eventually does get to the headshot and then explains that, and then after his head exploded, I kind of ducked because the blood and the skull fragments and shit were coming towards me. Now Rob jumps right in and is like, and you were 15, 20 feet behind him? And Landis is like, yes, that's about right. And because Rob wants you to think that the fatal headshot hit Kennedy in the front, blew shit out the back of Kennedy's head, and that Landis was trying to get out of the way of the flying debris from the wound that blew out the back of Kennedy's head. When in reality, what is going on here is that Kennedy is an open-topped limo, and when his head explodes, all that skull and blood and brain and all that stuff is now in the air. And while Kennedy's limo is going slow, it is still going forward, so there is wind pushing on all this loose material that's going backwards towards where Landis is. And that is why Landis has to react to try to avoid some of it, because it's just floating through the air the way it would happen. Like, if I was in a convertible and you were you were running behind me 10 or 15 feet behind me, and I popped a water balloon above my head in that convertible, you would have to react to that water that would now be coming at you, because that water is in the air and now it's being blown back towards you because of the way the wind works when a car is going forward. Like, this is why dogs stick their heads out of car windows, because they get to feel the air blowing on their snout, on their snouts, and they enjoy that. I mean, this isn't because the blast of the bullet pushed the fragments towards Landis. This is just standard physics 101 stuff. And the other thing about this that is so silly is, the other thing that's so silly about all this is that Landis's telling of the assassination is wrong. And Rob doesn't, Rob doesn't clarify this with him. Rob is just willing to let Landis be wrong, because again, Landis was just like, I heard the first shot, I turned over my shoulder to look where it came from, and then I looked at the president and he was like hunched over and he had his arms out, and then the second and third shots came in. And we know that's not true. We know the first shot missed. We know that Kennedy was wounded by the second shot. But Landis is telling this story, and he gets this very obvious, very basic detail of the assassination wrong. And Reiner doesn't correct him because, again, the old man's telling him what he wants to hear, so he's just confirming his priors. And Rob doesn't want to get in his way and make him like start stumbling over his story, because that's not good. That's not good podcasting, having like being like, oh, storyteller, you're screwing it up. But once again, from the top, tell me how it really happened. So I found that to be very interesting that Landis tells the story of the sequence of the assassination. The details Reiner doesn't want to get into, he ignores. The details Landis gets wrong, he ignores. But when it comes to that cloud of blood, Rob Reiner is all over it, because he's got to be there for that. And so that is like the first part of it. So, Haley, did you have any thoughts about that section of the Landis conversation?
No, I just like that Soledad opened up saying basically that, like, when you're making a documentary, you always hope that, like, breaking news happens while you're in the middle of making it. And I do think it's funny that this is just she feels she's making a informative documentary here.
Yes. Yeah, this very informative documentary that, again, cuts all kinds of corners to get to the predetermined conclusion it was lusting for the whole time. And now we get to the second part of the whole Landis thing, which is his story believable because it's so weird? Because...
Yeah, because, okay, yep. So he claims basically, like, he found the bullet and then he just kind of put it on the hospital bed and didn't say anything, right? He just kind of like...
Right.
See you later.
Yeah. Like, this, his whole story is so strange because he's claiming to have found the bullet inside the limo. They're all running into Parkland Hospital of the president. And then he just puts the bullet on President Kennedy's stretcher when I don't know exactly when he would have been able to do this, because he said he put it near the president's shoes. And Kennedy was like stripped of his clothes basically immediately once he was arrived in the emergency room. Like the sequence is Kennedy arrives in the emergency room. A doctor looks at him. He's got no pulse. So he's 99% dead. The doctor then finds a heartbeat, and then, well, we got a heartbeat, time for the good old college try, even though this guy's brain is missing. So they get to work. And as soon as like they say that he's got a heartbeat, the nurses rip all his clothes off. They just cut all his clothes off, except his tighty whities. They leave those on because presidential peen is a bridge too far for the Dallas doctors.
There'd be pictures of it, you know? And then, you know, there's shrinkage when you have your brain matter blown out. Yeah, so probably. It's not fair.
Yeah. Well, maybe if he was a shower, not a grower, maybe they would have. He's packing. We can cut that off. It's okay. When he says, I put it next to the president's shoes, it's like, well, you probably only had like 2 or 3 minutes to do that, because they took his clothes off right quick to treat him after they foolishly decided to adjudicate him as quote unquote alive at the start of this whole thing, instead of just looking at his brain and being like, yep, ain't nothing we can do with that. Just like, we'll call the coroner. We'll just get to it. But yeah, so he wouldn't have had a lot of time to do that. And the question is like, why would he do that? Why would you not? Because there's a million police officers around him at this point, like literally a million. There were police around the limo. There were police around the body. There are police swarming Parkland Hospital. He could have just gone, yo, copper, I found this bullet in the back of the limo. And he could have like signed a deposition. We could have had a chain of custody for the bullet. Like this would have been an important thing, but this guy just decided, I'm just going to leave this bullet here and someone will find it and just be like, where the fuck did this come from? And as Landis and Rob Reiner point out, this is not the historical record of the bullet. the historical record of the bullet was it was found on the stretcher that had carried Governor Conley to the emergency room where he was treated. That's where they found the bullet later. And Landis is just like, that's not true. My bullet was where I found it. It's like, you had 60 years to speak up. Why did you speak up like literally now when it's not going to make a dime's worth of difference? Like, he's like, I thought the Warren Commission was going to call me. You could have told the Warren Commission, yo, I want to testify. You could have got a lawyer and said, yo, I got information here. I got important information that needs to get out to the public now. And none of that happened. And now just 60 years later, this guy has this story about finding a bullet and putting it on a stretcher and then just washing his hands of the whole situation. And it's just so bizarre. It's such a strange thing. And the only reason why Reiner and Soledad and the conspiracy theorists believe it is because it confirms their priors. It's telling them what they want to hear. I mean, that's it. That's all there is to it. And it's just really nuts. I mean, I don't know why the guy's saying what he's saying now. I mean, maybe he wants to make a buck. Maybe he's deluded and thinks it's true. Maybe it is true, but that makes no sense because, again, we have to get into this whole thing about a bullet not penetrating the president's back. I mean, that's not how rifles work. I've had people tell me, oh, yeah, the Mannlicher-Kirchner sucks. Of course it would do that. It's like, that's not how a rifle works. That's not how jacketed bullets work. You know how many dumb documentaries I've watched where they fire bullets into fucking cubes of gelatin to simulate the Kennedy assassination? You know what's never happened in any of those documentaries? The bullet hits the blob of gelatin and just fucking stops. That doesn't happen. They're like, we took the Mannlicher-Kirchner and fired it at this block of gelatin. Bink! And the bullet like sticks halfway in, halfway out of the block of gelatin and just doesn't move. It's like, yeah, that's.
So, what do you think this guy's deal is? What do you think Landis's deal is? You think he's a fucking liar?
I think he's misremembering it. I just think he's literally like the fog of history has eaten his brain so badly that he's just gotten into this moment where he thinks this happened, and now he's telling this story, and
our totally responsible media, you know. Just ecosystem is willing to publish anything that somebody says with the breaking news, new information about the JFK assassination.
Yeah, Landis, this broke in the mainstream media. The mainstream news articles, the mainstream news networks, they talked about this. Landis got to do it, had to have a cup of coffee on TV about the truth because conspiracy theory stuff for the Kennedy assassination is catnip. People love it. Like, they can't get enough of it. If you were within 10 miles of Dealey Plaza on the day Kennedy got shot, you can talk about it and you'll get on TV. I mean, it's just the way it works. So, that is these two episodes. We went a total of 23 minutes, it looks like, covering these two episodes, which were about 16 minutes of actual content and way more ads. So, did you have any other final comments about Landis's episode?
No, I do not. I don't, honestly.
Yeah, because that, again, his episode is just so weak because it's mostly just him retelling this weird story and Rob yelling at him. And it made me personally laugh so much when I heard Landis telling his story and the moment he got into the hole. And then I heard the shot and I turned my shoulder. I'm like, Rob is not going to engage. Rob is never going to engage on this because he doesn't want to hear about shots from behind. And he didn't. And I was like, boom, nailed it. So obvious. So now we are going to take our ad break. We're going to do 6 ad breaks this episode. Just rake in those Swedish critters.
Whoa. No, we're just
doing this one. And then I'm going to give my actual closing argument about the Kennedy assassination and all that good stuff. So, and now the closing argument, which is basically just all the evidence against Oswald, which is so overwhelming. He broke his routine and went to his wife's house. His wife's house where she lived with CIA-affiliated Ruth Payne. And then got the gun. He then came to work, told his buddy it was curtain rods, never told the wife or Ruth Payne that he wanted curtain rods. The building that he did, the room in the rooming house he was living in had curtain rods already established. No curtain rods were found in the Texas School Book Depository after the assassination.
Did anyone check the curtains?
Yes, all the curtains in the Texas School Book Depository. Oswald just had, what are you doing, Lee? Hanging curtains at work. You know, as one does, one just takes your curtain rods from home and brings them to work to hang curtains at work. Yep. What was found in the Texas School Book Depository was the gun that Oswald had purchased via mail order. We have mentioned previously about how Reiner never brought up the attempted assassination of General Walker. When I was thinking about this, you know what he never also brought up? The photographs of Oswald in the backyard where he's holding the gun and he's got the gun in his hand. He's got the pistol on his hip. He's got the communist newspapers in his hands.
It's a pretty cool photo.
Oh, and there's a bunch of them. And one of them was George de Mornschmidt, our buddy, the apologist for Oswald, who was murdered by the CIA when he was going to testify and tell the truth. De Mornschmidt even had one of the copies of those photos. And when Oswald was brought into the police headquarters and they showed him the photos, Oswald was literally the first defendant in world history to declare it was a sham. Like, Oswald literally said they faked it. He's like, that's my face on somebody else's body. Oswald went with the Photoshop defense.
Awesome.
And they did this. They did this too in JFK. JFK the movie also went with Photoshop. They went that it was faked. And the Warren Commission, the House Select Committee on Assassinations, and literally every legitimate body that's ever examined the photographs has determined they are authentic. Marina Oswald testified to the fact that she took the photos. So this isn't something that's debatable unless you're a crank. It's just that simple. And again, those photos look terrible because they're a guy with his guns and his communist newspapers being like, "Woo, I'm a violent communist." So we have that. We have the fact that he fled. We have the fact that when he got to his boarding house, he had the cab driver drive past it, and then he looped back because he wanted to see if the cops had already made it to his boarding house. Then when he got to the boarding house, he grabbed his gun. Then he shot a cop, a thing that Reiner hand waves away so quickly.
Well, because we have to do another podcast series eventually.
Yeah, we have to do another podcast series about J.D. Tippit's assassination. And then when Oswald is arrested at the theater, he pulls the gun on the cops and tries to suicide by cop, but it doesn't work. So then he just gets arrested. But because when Lee Harvey Oswald's in custody, he whines about being a patsy. Oh, man, that means all that other evidence is gone. It all doesn't mean anything. He's totally innocent. And the thing is, and again, now Haley is mandated by law to reach through the screen and give me a slap because I'm going to think. I'm going to put myself in the mind of Lee Harvey Oswald, which is something that Rob Reiner does constantly in this series. And it's enraging. But when you have the fact that Oswald tried to shoot General Walker, who was a right-wing John Bircher piece of shit, and then you have Oswald murdering Kennedy, who was, as Reiner repeatedly talks about, the peace president who was trying to establish better relations with the Soviets and the Cubans and was trying to usher in world peace and universal prosperity and unicorns and all that good stuff. The fact of what happened with the Kennedy assassination when it comes to Oswald, and this is one of the things that I really think, if when you think about it, really offends these people, is that Lee Harvey Oswald wasn't killing John F. Kennedy. Lee Harvey Oswald was killing the president. He didn't care who was in the office at that time when it happened. He just wanted to kill the president. If it had been Eisenhower, if it had been Truman, if Nixon had beaten Kennedy and it had been Nixon, if it had been Lyndon Johnson, he just wanted to kill the president. And it just happened to be that JFK was the president at the time that he had a chance to take a run at the president and shoot them. And I think that like that being Oswald's quote unquote great man motive, which is what was Lone Nutters and Warren Commission folks like to talk about, that Oswald wanted to make his mark on history by doing a terrible big thing. It makes it more annoying and more frustrating for these people because it's like literally it's like, yo, Lee, did you read the fucking pamphlets that were being passed around in Dallas? Calling Kennedy a communist, calling Kennedy a giant piece of shit. Like buddy, like he's the Republicans in America literally thought that Kennedy was on your team. Why'd you kill him? And the answer is because he just wanted to go down in history. He wanted to be a big man. And again, I really believe that his whole act, his whole shtick was to be the persecuted communist. And that was the dream. And that dream got realized by so much of America. We validated Lee Harvey Oswald and his goal. We achieved his mission for him. So great job, all of us.
And Rob is like, Lee Harvey Oswald, innocent.
Yes. I mean, that's the thing. it is just so mind-blowing to me that you can look at all the evidence about what happened that day and then just be like, nah, they framed him. They just jammed him up. Like, so just think about that. The Dallas police have to be in on it because they're the ones who found the rifle on the sixth floor. So you're telling me that at least like multiple cops have to know that at some point after we locked down the Texas School Book Depository, another cop has to run in with the Mangiacarano rifle and hide it up there so the other police can find it. Cops have to put the shells, the bullet casings near the sniper's nest on the sixth floor for the police to find that shit. Some cop had to go to Oswald's house and steal the gun to bring it over there. There's so much work that has to be done here to frame him up. And this isn't including that, according to Reiner, the CIA and the mob and the anti-Castro Cubans are involved in it. The Dallas police have to be up into their necks in this shit, too. The conspiracy has to be so massive and so sprawling. It's unbelievable. And this is just a conspiracy to frame Oswald. Because the conspiracy to kill the president, as I've said a million times, is literally you just tell some idiot to stand on the corner of Elm and Houston with a pistol and Franz Ferdinand Kennedy, and it's over. And you don't need a sniper. You don't need Chucky the typewriter and the mysterious Frenchman, wee wee, and all these other people hanging out in Dealey Plaza, firing from 75 different angles from all these different trajectories. No, you just have one dude with a pistol waiting for him to take that 90-degree turn, and then that guy just like steps off the curb and just goes wham wham, and Kennedy's dead. And the thing about sniper fire is, no matter how good a sniper you are, you might miss. When you walk up to the president's not moving limo at point blank, you don't miss. You achieve success. The president is dead. And it's just so silly because the actual conspiracy theory that these people are talking about, it involves framing Oswald as much as it involves killing Kennedy. And that's so much work. It's so much work for so little profit. Why did you have to frame this one dum-dum? Like, Oswald's not special. He's not this awesome superhuman patsy that has to be framed. You could have framed anybody. You could have pinned this on anybody. I mean, Jackie Kennedy, after it was all done and she had some time to reflect on it, she lamented that a quote-unquote a silly communist did this, and that if her husband had to be killed, she wished he had been killed by an anti-civil rights bigot. She wished that her husband had died in the cause of civil rights. And how tough would that have been? You don't think you could have found some racist idiot in Dallas who would have been willing to take a pop at the president if you offered him enough money or told him his family would get taken care of? I mean, oh my God. So yeah. But no, we had to blame Oswald so we could begin our invasion of Cuba, which then didn't happen. So much of the last few episodes are all about how Kennedy was assassinated to facilitate the invasion of Cuba, which then we didn't do, which I don't even get it. So, yeah.
It was good. I'm looking forward personally to when he goes into the Tippett podcast.
He's never doing a Tippett podcast.
No,
no, never. Because going into the Tippett podcast, you're getting even deeper into the weeds, and no one cares about Tippett. And there's so much evidence against Oswald when it comes to Tippett. You'd literally have to spend like the first like five episodes trying to debunk all the witnesses who saw him do it, and then you can start getting into the theories of who actually did it. And it's like really nuts. I think my favorite Tippett conspiracy theory is that they switched Tippett's body with Kennedy's body to try to conceal what really happened to Kennedy, because Tippett supposedly looked like him a little bit, and that the JD in JD Tippett's name stood for Jefferson Davis Tippett, and that he was like a white supremacist and kind of a monster. And that's not true. His name, his initials did not stand for anything. His name was just JD Tippett. So, yeah. So, yeah, so I think that's it for the Reiner series, unless he crawls out of the muck with another horrible thing to tell us about. So, yeah, so that's that. I'm done. I'm drained. I'm diminished. I'm finally defeated by Rob Reiner and Soledad O'Brien.
Listeners, to the few listeners who are actually listening to this, we are going to maybe occasionally keep up with the Sunday stuff if we can find stuff to watch or do. So if you have any suggestions, let me know. Let us know. You guys get to talk. You guys get to have input because you actually listened this far. It's like a little secret Easter egg. Yeah. It's like a little secret, you know, chest.
Yeah, whatever you guys want us to do for bonus content, because like basically the plan is to do the record on Wednesday, release it on Wednesday night, Thursday afternoon, regular weekly podcast. We want to do like a kind of in the weeds podcast for Sundays. And so whatever you guys want, we're here for it. We're here to get into the weeds, talking about the right wing stuff that Haley deals with, QAnon stuff, whatever. I did the Q school thing with Stephanie. I'm going to try to keep doing those, but like, we want to do something. So whatever, steer us, guide us with your hands, your guiding hands, much as Ruth Payne guided Lee Harvey Oswald into his job at the Texas School Book Depository, where he was then framed for murdering Kennedy. We wish for you to guide us towards content that you want to listen to. So,
cause I have a suggestion. Charlie Kirk does like a kind of podcast / show with Jack Posobiec. Blake Neff, who is the writer for Tucker Carlson, they got fired because he was too racist and sexist and too big of a creep. They always have guests on. So, okay. My mom, I told her I'm on the podcast. I'm like, Mom, I'm on the podcast. And she's like, let me text you 15 times in a row. It's just dinging in my ear. Yeah, we are leaving this in. I'm going to send it to her. Because I told her, cannot talk right now. And she's like, okay, I'm going to continue doing that. Holy shit. Anyways. Yeah, so my suggestion was maybe like something like that, because it's a little bit of both of us. Like Charlie Kirk lives in Arizona. He's a white supremacist, I think we could fairly say at this point. Jack Posobiec is also a white supremacist, but like he's kind of a QAnon he dabbles in the more conspiracy world. Not like the Pizzagate. He was kind of like a Pizzagate guy.
He works all the angles. He's every kind of right wing piece of shit you could imagine.
He's a MyPillow guy. He's a big MyPillow guy. That was one of my suggestions. Maybe we could, some weeks, maybe those are L's, and maybe we find something else to watch, or maybe somebody has a nice solid suggestion. Whatever you guys want, if anybody's even listening right now. So yep, that's how we'll end this.
We're here for you. So thank you for listening. If you want to give us money, go to patreon.com/pokerpolitics. Leave a 5-star review on all the stuff. All that good things. Thanks to Eric for the intro. Thanks to me for remixing the music intro. all that fun stuff. Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. God, good speed, Patriots.